Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
I'm Afua Hirsch.
I'm Peter Frankopan.
And in our podcast, Legacy, we explore the lives of some of the biggest characters in history.
This season, we're exploring the life of Cleopatra.
An iconic life full of romances, sieges, and tragedy. But who was the real Cleopatra? It feels like her story's been told by others with their own agenda for centuries.
But her legacy is enduring, and so we're going to dive into how her story has evolved all the way up to today.
I am so excited to talk about Cleopatra, Peter.
Love Cleopatra.
She is an icon.
She's the most famous woman in antiquity. It's got to be up there with the most famous woman of all time.
But I think there's a huge gap between how familiar people are with the idea of her compared to what they actually know about her life and character.
So for pyramids, Cleopatra and Cleopatra's nose.
Follow Legacy now wherever you get your podcasts. Or you can binge entire seasons early and ad-free on Wondery Plus.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Dan Snow's History Hit. I've got an interesting podcast for you today. I think in years to come, when people look back on this period of human history, they will look at a globally hegemonic power, the United States of America, a power that's put the robot on Mars, a country with the largest and most productive economy in the history of mankind, a country capable of wielding military force, an order of magnitude greater than any previous imperial power the world's ever known, an arsenal of nuclear warheads directly controlled by one individual that can end life on Earth as we know it. And people in a few years' time will look back and they will wonder how it came to be that supreme executive power in this country was given to Donald J. Trump. Whatever your views on Donald Trump, you'll admit that he is unorthodox. He's breaking every rule and norm that has bound previous presidents. And if nothing else, his method of communication using social media is extraordinary, unprecedented. So on the podcast today, I've got two Pulitzer Prize winning journalists. I've got Phil Rucker and Carol Leenig, both Pulitzer Prize winners, both at the Washington Post. They've written a new book. There are more revelations about what's been going on inside the Trump White House. This is recent history, everybody, but it's so fascinating. And I want to ask them about their revelations, but I also wanted to ask them, you know, for all of you history geeks out there, how can we trust what they're writing? There's a great tradition in US journalism of using unnamed sources. This provides historians with a problem because we like citations. We like to know where things come from. So we had a bit of chat about that as well. So please enjoy this podcast. Don't forget, you can go to historyhit.tv, the digital history channel. It's like Netflix for history. You pay a small subscription and you get Netflix for history, for true history fans. We're building it. It's getting better all the time. It's really, really exciting. So please join us. If you use the code POD6, exclusive to listeners of this podcast, POD6, P-O-D-6, P-O-D-6, you get 6 weeks for free. Check it out. If you don't like it, don't subscribe. But we'd love you to come and check it out. So have a listen to the podcast. Then please head over to historyhit.tv and sign up. It's really exciting what we've got going on there. Thank you for all your support.
I feel the hand of history upon our shoulders.
All this tradition of ours, our school history, our songs, this part of the history of our country, all were gone and finished and liquidated.
One child, one teacher, one book, and one pen can change the world.
Guys, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I'm sure you're incredibly busy, both with the book, but also your day job. How are things in DC at the moment?
Dan, they're pretty hectic. You know, the president's impeachment trial is getting going in the Senate, and that is consuming his attention as he's, you know, trying to scramble to survive here. But we're in the throes of a real political moment and a historic moment in Washington.
And volume two of your book is going to be perhaps even more explosive than volume one, guys.
There's a lot of interesting history being made today and in the next few weeks, but we are mostly focused on the book we just finished.
Could you both just talk to me a little bit about what it has been like being senior experienced reporters in Washington during the Trump presidency? We hear a lot about norms, about things being different. How different are they, do you think, in your experience from previous presidential administrations?
Well, Dan, I covered the Obama White House, and that was so similar to what I understand most White Houses have been like, and the reporting sort of followed a pattern to some degree. But the Trump story has been entirely new. As you know, it's almost dizzying. Day by day and hour by hour, there's a new crisis, a new investigation, a new holy crap moment that we're chronicling here at the Washington Post. And what Carol and I tried to do with this book is really hit the pause button and look back at what has been an extraordinary 3 years in Washington with really monumental change to our government, to our country, to the institutions that a lot of Americans hold dear, and to assess the consequences. We did a ton of extensive, rigorous reporting with people who've worked very closely with the president, with President Trump, to document what has happened in this country and in Washington during these 3 years.
Yeah, Carol, can I ask you, because in the U.S. there's this extraordinary tradition of this, you know, wonderful political journalism, and we recognize it. And I'm such a fan of books like The Game Changer, from the detailing the Obama that rise to power. But it's a particular style. You're not able to say who your sources are. But we have to just, we the public, just believe that you guys are legit. Like, why should we? You're putting stuff that is incendiary in these pages. What can you tell the audience other than saying, well, Rex Tillerson told me? How can you reassure us that it is true?
So, Dan, the only thing I can tell you is that Phil and I have been reporters for decades. We have reputations at stake. We have a rigor and a protocol and a standard. And I would like to say something about the sourcing. You know, in our daily reporting, Phil and I reveal a lot in the Washington Post's pages. Much of what you know about inside the Trump White House comes from us and our colleagues and some of our competitors. But in the book, we had sources who were very reluctant to talk at the time that these events were unfolding. One reason was they saw the president belittling, berating, and basically harassing people who questioned his intelligence or his decision making. And then we had people who honestly, as patriots, felt strongly that you don't criticize a sitting president. They came forward, broke their silence, talked with us for the first time about some of these events because they thought it was important to tell for history, and we're indebted to them.
There's the ones that are making news, rightly so, that you guys are breaking new stories. For example, President Trump didn't seem to know what had happened at Pearl Harbor, for example. Do you think are those the things people are picking up on about this book, or is it, as you say, the kind of general impression given stepping back a bit and just looking at the whole presidency?
You know, Dan, I think there are a couple takeaways from this book. Certainly, there are a lot of new scoopy stories, some of which have come out in the press, some of which are still in the book and have not been discovered yet, but that add new context and color and information about this administration, about this president, moments and episodes and dialogue and so forth. But the other takeaway is thematic and contextual. And one of the things we did with this book, and it's really a collection of scenes from the very first day after the election, when Trump's assembling his government, all the way up to the eve of impeachment, we looked for patterns and we tried to detect what is different. What does all of the chaos that we've been chronicling for 3 years add up to, and what are the consequences in America?
You mentioned Trump assembling his government. What's very striking about your book is it appears that his daughter was foremost in assembling the government. I mean, that's the, just on page one, there's a mind-blowing description of how Flynn was given a top job without any vetting, without any of the procedures and the practice that would have been gone through as standard in the previous administration.
You know, Dan, Phil and I are so glad you noticed that, because one of the things we wanted to share with readers from our reporting with many, many people who were there basically at the ground floor of the Trump presidency in setting up you know, what would be the transition and what would become the West Wing. Those people were sort of shocked at the lack of care in deciding who should have some of the most important jobs and make some of the life and death decisions that would protect our country. And, you know, General Flynn's selection is emblematic of that. He had a fairly mixed record as a general. President Obama had basically fired him because of concerns about his temperament. There had been numerous investigations of his interactions with foreign officials, and yet he gets one of the most important jobs in the White House. And that sort of set the stage for what would happen. There were a lot of novices, there was not very much vetting, and these are the people giving the president the advice, again, to keep our country safe.
It's been interesting over the last few years. There's a sense from people who are paying close attention that the Trump White House has kind of been pretty chaotic, and he was unprepared for the role at best. Reading your book, compiled from insiders, it actually looks like the rest of the world, we were behind the curve. Like, it's crazier than we even thought.
Well, Dan, you mentioned the president being unprepared for the job, and I think everybody who's worked for him would agree on that point. But there was an effort early on in the administration to help school him, to tutor him, to get him up to speed, to make him sort of understand the world. And one of the most explosive scenes in our book is a meeting that took place in the tank, which is a sacred sanctum conference room inside the Pentagon, where the president's war cabinet tried to school him on our military deployments all around the world. And he just could not tolerate that session. He didn't like the schoolhouse vibe, and he lashed out at them. He called them a bunch of dopes and babies. He said, "I would never go to war with you people." And it was an emotionally scarring moment for those who work in our military, for those who worked in this administration. And, you know, it really became an inflection point for this presidency, because after that point, Trump rejected a lot of advice and really started making decisions on his own, and it became a presidency of one.
This is not your fault, but you can understand there's a huge frustration from the rest of the world, and I'm sure from US citizens in particular, that all these people are like standing up and telling you guys off, you know, quietly in hidden places about the reality of the Trump administration. But why don't, if they want to do something about it, why don't they stand up and do it in public? Like, why don't these people who worked with Trump initially to try and temper some of his excesses, and who failed and were fired and humiliated, why don't they come out and speak in public?
It's a great question, Dan, and we can't go to the heart of the motivations of some of the people that could speak up about what they've witnessed. We can tell you a few things about our sources. Again, one of them that I'm thinking of said very plainly, "I'm never going to criticize a sitting president. That's not what I do. That's not how I'm trained." But think about the larger picture here of what we have learned and what you have seen even across the pond, which is this is a president with an extremely abusive management style. His power of the megaphone of tweeting at people, he has deployed to berate, belittle, and chase a lot of people around who question him. And some of the sources we spoke to said they're fearful of that kind of retaliation from basically the most powerful person in the country.
Wow. I remember Rod Rosenstein. There was reporting about Rod Rosenstein who he was saying he didn't want to be subjected to the tweets. Like, that was the thing he was trying to avoid.
That's right.
It's terrifying. You know, it's important that we don't just think of people that we disagree with, that they're not just idiots, right? So what you identify Trumpism in this book. You identify a kind of coherent thread. Can you talk to the audience a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So, you know, Dan, there are a couple ways you can think about Trumpism. The first would be the sort of ideological strain and the power of this populist movement that he created in 2016. He cast himself as the champion for working class people, and he made it all in his own self-image. We opened the book, actually, on the floor of the Republican National Convention, when Trump, the celebrity mogul, the real estate guy, becomes the most unlikely presidential nominee for a major party, but he declares, "I alone can fix it." He was so focused on his own self-image, on his own personal brand, and he built an entire political movement around that, and that has propelled him through all of these crises, through the Mueller investigation, and made him a really potent threat to become reelected this fall in November, perhaps.
This is After Dark, Myths, Misdeeds, and the Paranormal.
The podcast that takes you to the shadiest corners of the past, unpicking history's spookiest, strangest, and most sinister stories. I'm Maddie Pelling.
And I'm Anthony Delaney. Join us every Monday and Thursday, and we'll take a look at the darker side of history, from haunted pubs to Houdini to witch trials and arsenic-laced breakfasts.
Follow After Dark, Myths, Misdeeds, and the Paranormal wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by History Hit.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is, you know, I'm not expecting answers from you guys. These are the biggest questions of our time. But what is it that has changed? Is it technology? Is it people? Is it partisanship? Is it economy? What is it that has changed that means that this person is able to get away with gaffes and actual, you know, just extraordinary outbursts that a previous generation would not have been able to do? What is different about Trump and the era in which we live?
Dan, I think it's important, though we have a lot of people in our book who are very critical of President Trump, I think it's important to give him credit for the master of the megaphone that he is. He has been able to convince a lot of supporters, appropriately so, I think, that he's a fighter for them. He's the guy who's first going to say, I'm standing up for you. I'm looking out for you. You've been forgotten by the elites on the two coasts, by the super educated who look down at you through their nose. He's been able to tell those people, I'm your champion, and they believe him. And I understand why. A lot of people in this country feel left behind, and they do feel looked down upon. And Donald Trump is magnifying their concerns and at the same time dividing the country ever more with the way he fights for them.
And Dan, if I could just add one example of what's changed in our politics and certainly in the media and the way the public have reacted to it. I've covered politics at the Washington Post for about a decade, and I was our reporter on the Mitt Romney campaign in 2012, and I traveled with him to London right on the eve of the London Olympics. And you and your listeners might recall that he did an interview, a television interview, where he questioned whether London was prepared for the security threat at the Olympics, which in today's environment would seem like a total nothing burger, but was a major global headline gaffe. I think the tabloids in London called him Mitt the Twit. The then mayor, Boris Johnson, had that massive rally in Hyde Park saying, are you ready for the Olympics? And Londoners roared. And so, you know, the way that politicians in the past got so dinged for these gaffes and it really became destructive for their campaigns, Trump is like Teflon. He says stuff every hour of every day of every month that offends people, that horrifies people, and yet he doesn't lose his supporters. And that's really, frankly, to his credit, his mastery at branding and ability to kind of get himself back up, have no shame, and fight back.
Is it also about the news environment, the ability to live in these echo chambers that we, you know, are Trump fans, Trump voters, are they insulated from the work that you guys do? Like, is it frustrating in your newsroom? If you're breaking stories that 25 years ago would have been on the Neil Lear NewsHour, would have been watched by 25 million people and would have just been the end of the game. Whereas now, do you feel that you're able to reach those people?
Dan, we don't have an agenda as reporters. And as I like to say often, our executive editor, Marty Baron, says we're not at war with this White House. We're at work. We share our work and people will make of it what they will. Journalists have always been the people who provide information upon which, you know, the citizens can make decisions. I don't find it frustrating. I find our reporting to be professionally really satisfying, invigorating. And honestly, Phil and I felt so strongly that this was becoming dizzying. All of the hour-by-hour crises, scandals, investigations, events, we wanted to make sense of it for ourselves, make sense of it for readers. What's really going on behind the scenes and what does it mean? We hope this book will reach people in blue and red states and that they will take away a bigger picture of what this president is after and what motivates him.
So what do you think does motivate him?
You know, the truth is we don't know what's in his head, of course. I don't think anybody other than Donald Trump can say what truly motivates him, but we can tell you what all of these, you know, dozens of people who work very closely with him told us. And they say he's motivated by self-image, by his survival instincts, by his narcissism. Some have phrased it that way. And we describe in the book that Trump's North Star is the perpetuation of his own power, that there's this sort of vainglorious pursuit to stay in command, to stay in control. It's one of the reasons why he ground down all of his guardrails and pushed away some of his more seasoned advisors. It's one of the reasons, frankly, why he was able to muscle through the Mueller investigation and fight back at every turn to defend himself and to try to survive politically. He is so driven by keeping hold of his own power and by his own brand and how he presents himself, how his image appears to the public.
And Dan, if I could add one thing to that, we describe, because of the amazing sources who agreed to talk with us, we describe a presidency in which it's a den of dysfunction. And the president's decision-making, the thing that frightened and disturbed them the most, was that he was often thinking, how does this work for me? Rather than how is this best for the country? And over again, they would show us moments when how he would survive the political drama of the moment was paramount in his mind, not necessarily what's good for the country writ large or even the country in this very moment of crisis.
I've got to ask, and this is outside the book, and I can understand if you can't answer this as a journalist, but you say the perpetuation of his own power. This is a man who, as you point out in the book, has actually, we forget, he has refused to accept the vote count in the 2016 election. Right? He has never accepted that he was actually defeated in the popular vote, right? He said there were illegal votes. In the reporting you've done, and we're getting close to the election of 2020 now, do you have concerns that he will... there will be a major constitutional crisis. He will refuse to leave office in the event of him losing election. He will refuse to accept the result of an election.
Well, Dan, certainly there are some in Washington who have that concern. That's not something Carol and I think about, and it's not something we as journalists would be concerned about. I can tell you back during the 2016 campaign, Trump and his rhetoric on the campaign trail in those closing days seemed to be laying the groundwork for contesting the election results were he to lose to Hillary Clinton. He, of course, ended up winning, but there was a very real fear within the Democratic Party in 2016 that if he fell short in the Electoral College total, that he would refuse to concede and that there could be a crisis And you know, I expect that there will be some of that conversation again as we get closer to November of 2020. But, you know, that's really not something Carol and I have any expertise to be able to predict or feel any advocacy or concern over.
Totally, totally, I totally understand. Well, guys, thank you so much indeed for talking to me. The book is called...
A Very Stable Genius, Donald J. Trump's Testing of America.
Well, thank you very much indeed. He's testing, he's not just testing America, he's testing the rest of the world. Let me tell you over here from the other side of the pond as well. Thank you very much, guys. It is an outstanding book and very good luck with it.
Thank you.
I feel the hand of history upon our shoulders.
All this tradition of ours, our school history, our songs, this part of the history of our country, all were gone and finished and liquidated.
One child, one teacher, one book, and one pen can change the world.
He tells us what is possible, not just in the pages of history books, but in our own lives as well.
I have faith in you.
Hope you enjoyed the podcast, everyone. Just massive favour to ask if you could go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, give it a rating, 5 stars, obviously, and then leave a glowing review. That'd be great. My mum is getting overwhelmed by the amount of different email accounts she set up to leave.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Dan Snow's History It. Please follow this show wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps us and you'll be doing us a big favour. Don't forget you can also listen to all of these podcasts ad-free and watch hundreds of TV documentaries when you subscribe at historyhit.com/subscribe. As a special gift, you can also get your first 3 months for just £1 a month when you use code DANSNOW at checkout.